Well, good evening, my dear brothers and sisters. Good to be with you again. I think it was in 2003 I was last here, but it's a long time. It is an unusual subject, I must admit. I don't think we get many addresses on dinosaurs. But I do think it is an important subject, especially for youngsters, parents, or grandparents, because dinosaurs are a wonderful marketing tool by the evolutionists. They get children at a young age interested in things that are supposed to have lived millions of years ago. And I remember as a child not knowing how to fit the dinosaurs in within the biblical picture. And so my friends were interested and excited about dinosaurs. It was just at the time when a lot of discoveries being made and a lot of talks about dinosaurs. But I just had to shut them out and put them to the back of my mind because I couldn't see how they fitted in with the Bible. And it wasn't until probably I was about 14, 15, 16 that I read something which fitted them into a biblical framework. And then suddenly, yes, it all made sense. And so that's why I give these talks, because unless we tell our children that there is a biblical framework for dinosaurs to fit in, they are very perplexed, because they come to Sunday school and they're told that God created the heavens and the earth not very long ago, and then at school these creatures which lived so long ago. So what we're going to try and do this evening is to give you a framework in which to fit the dinosaurs within a biblical framework. So this is from Wikipedia. Dinosaurs first appeared during the Triassic period, 231.4 million years ago, and were the dominant terrestrial vertebrates for about 135 million years, from the Jurassic to the end of the Cretaceous, about 66 million years ago, and when this Cretaceous-Paleogene extinction event led to the extinction of most of the dinosaur groups at the close of the Mesozoic era. Now, in all fairness, I took this off Wikipedia a few years ago, and I did just check it last week, and they have rounded 231.4 to 231, because it is always ridiculous when you're talking about a time period, that part of it, to do it just on point. But I've left it in there because alongside this century is a chart, and at the top of the chart it says 231.4 million years ago. So I thought, well, I'm not going to change it, I'm going to read it. So, yes, let's try and visualise what 231.4 billion years ago, million years ago, represents. It's a number which we find very difficult to get a hang on. So, this picture, I'm guessing, is about my span. So if we say that line is 2 meters long, where would, on that scale, 231.4 million years be? Now, I'm very good because multiple choice questions, which is so beloved of youngsters today. So hands up for A. What you're doing is dividing, I mean, you can knock the last three noughts off. You're dividing 6 into 231400. So is the answer A, or B, or C, or D? Who will volunteer to shout out the correct answer? I'm hearing C, am I? Was that C?
Yeah,
C is actually the correct answer. So, if 6,000 years, which is, well, I believe God created the Earth about 6,000 years ago, if that's a 2 meter line, then on that scale, 231 would be 77 kilometers, or 48 miles, if you're old fashioned. Now, oh, of course, I've forgotten to change the map. I gave this at Auckland last week. So if you imagine you're at Hamilton, the length of that arrow would take you somewhere up to there. So, you know, it's an immense difference in the time period. Now, some of the problems with millions of years ago is that we find dinosaur bones, now normally fossilised, lines, but they're not all fossil lines. We do find what are known as fresh bones. And this raises, of course, a problem. If they're supposed to have died out millions of years ago, how could they remain fresh over that period of time? And very recently, they've not only discovered fresh dinosaur bones, but within those bones is blood and blood tissue, which again poses a tremendous problem to them, because it doesn't last that long. You know, it's crazy to think it would last millions of years. The other problem is that we find many man-made depictions, carvings on churches or temples or accounts in history of dinosaur-like creatures. And one has to say, well, how is it that one can have a depiction of a dinosaur-like creature if it died out long, long before man was on the scene? And also, we find among the fossils of the dinosaurs are plants and other animals which are still living with us today. Again, it makes it very difficult to understand that this is something that lived such a long time ago, when there are still many creatures that belong to the age of the dinosaur still with us today. So what I want to do is to fit dinosaurs within the biblical framework, look at dinosaurs, look at the worldwide depictions, look at some living fossils, look at perhaps some living dinosaurs on this matter of the flesh blood, and explain why we don't find dinosaurs in the Bible as a word, but perhaps we do find some descriptions of animals which fit dinosaurs better than anything else, and see how they're all part of God's creation and live contemporary with man, but their demise was caused by the changed conditions at the time of the flood. After the floods, animals and man were living shorter lives, and there wasn't the vegetation to sustain these big animals. And finally, we will just have a word. I don't normally talk about this kind of thing, but Jurassic Park, just so you know, you've got to do a real hodgepodge tonight. So we find remains of dinosaurs all around the world. I know there isn't an arrow on New Zealand, but I'm quite sure you've got dinosaurs, not just your teachers, as fossil remains all over the world. Some of them are little creatures, some are big creatures, great variation in size. There's a man, if you can see it. Can I move this desk without upsetting things and you can see it better? I'll just come back there. Can you see that better? Because it's better to see the whole screen than just the screen. So there's a depiction of a man, Brachiosaurus about 13 metres high, Supersaurus about 17, and the Sauropodium about 18 metres high. So that's pretty tall. Any idea what the length of this wall is? Metres?
18?
18? 18
metres?
10 metres? Yeah, 10 metres, 32 feet, I thought, yeah. So, if you upended the hall and the building out there, you'd probably get up to about 18 metres, yeah. This has now been superseded. They now found a different, bigger creature, a titanosaur, which they reckon was about 20 metres high. These are some of the bones that they found. This is an account back in May of 1914. You can see the size of the bone, absolutely stupendous, and it's thought that, you know, it'll be about 20 metres up to its head and about 40 metres from nose to tail. A huge, huge creature. Now, it is suspected, we can't be dogmatic about this, but it's thought that most of the dinosaurs were plant eaters, and we'll see the significance of that later. They vary from very small things, size of chickens, up to great big groups that we just saw on the previous slide. As well as land creatures, there are fossils of huge sea creatures and air creatures. Flying reptiles with a wingspan of about 15 metres, So again, as I say, if you go from this wall right to the outside, if you imagine a bird with that wingspan coming up, it'd be like an aeroplane, wouldn't it? It'll be pretty frightening. So these huge creatures did exist. Now, as with all fossils, we don't find any evidence of intermediate forms. So we find different sorts of dinosaurs, but there isn't any transition from another creature. This is what Darwin had hoped would be found over the time, that his theory would have evidence in the missing links, that the missing links are all missing. And the other thing which I'd say at the beginning is all pictures are artistic. Whatever pictures I show on the screen there, whatever pictures you see in your books, they are all what an artist has drawn. Normally we just have a pile of bones. We don't really know even how to fit those bones together, but even if we did know how to fit those bones together, we don't really know what the creature looked like just from its bones, and we can illustrate that. There's a small animal, and one can draw it so it looked like a young lion. In fact, it is the skeleton of a poodle. Now, a poodle and a young lion don't look the same, but you can't tell just by looking at the bone structure. Here's a bird. You could draw it as a turkey, but in actual fact, this is a peacock. A totally different appearance. But just from the skeleton, you can't tell. So as I say, anything that you see in the pictures that are here are entirely what an artist, and he is coloured by his background, like in the evolutionary steps of man, that they draw these skeletons looking very ape-like and then change them. That's all just based upon people's preconceptions and their imaginations. Normally, we find these fossil graveyards just an absolute dense mass, and we have no idea what they really look like. Now, there aren't many historical accounts of large creatures and strange pictures of ancient creatures. One of the most well-known is in Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar was very keen on his tiles, and they have stood the test of time. We see perfectly normal animals depicted, but among them are strange creatures like this one. If you look at the front legs and you look at the back legs, hopefully if you can see the bottom of the screen there, you'll see this has got paws and that has got claws. Mm. I know of no creature today that has got paws at the front and claws at the back, and a strange long neck and a strange long tail. And so we have to say, well, had the artist had a lot of cheese the night before and suddenly dreamt something like this and depicted it? Or was it a creature that he was acquainted with, along with the horses and the birds and all the other creatures? And so he depicted it in tiles, something that was known to him. And it's interesting how around the world we have depictions of these strange dragons, we call fire-breathing creatures. And one has to say, well, is it just a coincidence that different nations have similar ideas of these ancient creatures, or were they creatures which were contemporary with man, but have now died out? George and the Dragon. Well, not very far from where Jasmine and I live is a church which has got carvings around it of perfectly normal creatures. But there is a panel here, and if I just enlarge it, you'll see them a bit better, of bipedal creatures. In other words, creatures which have got very strong back legs and puny little arms and walk on their two legs. A bit kangaroo-like, I suppose. And again, one has to say, why did he depict creatures like this, which we would say are prehistoric creatures? How did he know what they looked like, unless they were contemporary with the carver that carved them? And up in Carlisle, to the north of where we live, there is a tomb. It's normally kept on the carpet because it's all brass. And this is an artist's drawing of what it probably was like in its all its glory before it was worn out underfoot. And round the outside there's words, but there are also depictions of creatures. There are four different types of fish. There's a fox, a bear, a dog, a bird. All recognisable creatures, but among them are two oddities. These two dinosaur-looking creatures, their necks are entwined there. You can see this one has got barbs on its tail. You know, strange creatures. So, as I say, they're interspersed with other animals that we can recognise. So again, did he have a weird dream that night and just draw it? Or were these creatures which he was acquainted with? Yep, that's on the tail there. This is in Cambodia, looking very much like a stegosaurus. Now, not everybody accepts this. Some people say, well, all this which looks like the spines which a stegosaurus has on its back, well, that's all part of the background carving. Maybe it is, but also it is a strange looking creature which is carved on this temple deck. This is from America, Utah, and Rock Canyon. If you've got very good eyesight, you can just see the outline of a man there. And this has been enhanced so that we can actually see it a bit better. But very much like a sauropod dinosaur, who clearly was contemporary with man. Whoever drew the two, drew them together. So man was there when he drew this creature here. I don't think any dinosaur drew that picture, it was a man. So man and this creature must have been contemporary. So let's just have a look at living fossils. One of the classics is the coelic. This was supposed to have died out 65 million years ago, but in biologist was visiting South Africa, went to the local fish market and saw on the slab something that she only knew from her textbooks about this extinct coelacanth. And subsequently it was found that the coelacanth is very much alive and can be found in several areas. Now, what men were interested, evolutionists were interested about this fish, was they said, well, this is a fish that is evolving to be able to walk on the land, and it's got these extra fins here to help it to get out of the water and to crawl onto land. Here is evidence of evolution. Well, now they have found coelacanth is a living fish and observed it. It is a ground feeder and it uses these fins just to drag itself along the bottom. Nothing to do with crawling out onto the land. So that should have died out, or was said to have died out until it was discovered in 1938, but it very much was alive. It's supposed to have died out 65 million years ago. The Komodo dragons, they're supposed to have died out about the same period, 66 million years ago. They were only discovered in 1912, so just over 100 years ago, and they're described as living examples of the prehistoric age of the reptiles. So these are creatures which are very prehistoric looking. They haven't died out, they are still alive. They did find in Australia the skeleton of a much bigger animal, which they described as at the bottom there, it's a kind of souped-up Komodo dragon. And we'll explain, as we get a bit further along, why it probably is not a souped-up version, it is just an older, longer, bigger version of a Komodo. But we'll come to that in due time. The Papaki was once thought to be extinct. It used to appear in the evolutionary chart of the horse, how the horse went from this creature to that creature. This was supposed to be one of the links in the chain, but it was found it wasn't, hadn't been wiped out, it was still alive. And it's no longer used. The evidence of the horse evolution is so faulty that most people just don't mention it, because it is very damning, because it shows that they devolved and not evolved. They got simpler instead of more complex. It doesn't really help their cause. The next one is of a plant, Ginkgo biloba, which has a very distinctive leaf. We've got a tree in our garden, though I understand why we've been away. Great big branch has come down, and we've had to chop it up and deal with it. The distinctive leaf is being found in fossils, again, back in the time when dinosaurs were supposed to have lived. This particular tree was in existence, so here we have a tree which hasn't changed at all, which is somewhat, isn't it? If evolution is true, then things should always be changing. We shouldn't find things that haven't changed for long periods of time. Why hasn't evolution affected? Now, there are many accounts around the world of what we will call living dinosaurs. One of the most famous is in the Congo, what they call Mokel Mbembe. Well, they probably pronounce it differently to that, that's how I pronounce it. And it means blocker of the river. And when white man goes and shows the Congolese pictures of dinosaur-like creatures, they say, yes, that's what's down up the river there. And our forefathers have seen it, these big creatures that block the river. And yeah, people have tried to find them, and they haven't found them. Loch Ness monster number two. But who knows? Man is still making lots of discoveries. It is thought that we haven't even found half of all the different creatures that God has made. But here's a more interesting one, which is a prehistoric, inverted commas, elephant from Nepal. Now, Blasher Snell is the chap that discovered it some 16 years ago. I always tell this tale because we have a slight connection with Blasher Snell, in so much that about 3 o'clock in the morning, the telephone on Anthea's side of the bed rang on a very crackly line, said, "This is Blashford Snell here," and asked for somebody who'd obviously got the wrong number. Anthea passed asleep, but as quick as the flash, she said, "This is the Queen of Sheba here," and put the phone down. And I would love to meet him to see whether he remembers that. But that's all by the way. He went to Nepal and he found these elephants, which until 16 years ago, white man hadn't seen. And they have a very distinctive hump to them. Strange hump. But if we go, and these are allegedly 30,000-year-old cave paintings in France, we shall see that they have this distinctive hump there, exactly like the Nepalese elephants. Now, these are all supposed to be extinct creatures, but maybe they're not extinct at all. They're still alive, just in the pool. So, fresh dinosaur bones. This is a problem. And it goes back to 1961, which is a long time ago, I must admit. But this cat found all these fresh bones and therefore didn't take much notice of them because, fresh bones, nobody was interested in. It was 20 years later before somebody realised that these were actually dinosaur bones, but they were fresh, hadn't been mineralised. Bones of horned dinosaurs. So, now, how can you explain that these were supposed to have died out 70 million years ago, yet the bones remain fresh? Rather indicates that the dating is a bit up the creek, doesn't it? Now, this is the chart that people use to date fossils. This is a geological column. There are index fossils, so if you find a particular fossil, then you run along and you say, well, that is the age of the fossil. And we have to say, in fairness, that anywhere in the world can you find all these different players, one on top of the other. You find some and then missing ones, sometimes they're topsy-turvy. This is put together because we find in one place that layer is upon that one, and that one is upon that one somewhere else, and by piecing together from around the world, you put that together there. I believe it's much more reasonable. We just went this morning to the caves, the glowworm caves, and out, you know, how many millions of years ago these were all laid down, all waterborne strata, and you just thought, you know, all these strata overwhelming all these creatures over millions of years. It makes much more sense that in time of the floods, tidal waves going around the world, that all these creatures were overwhelmed. Because, you see, the rocks are made where the fossils are from sedimentary rocks, waterborne rocks. It makes much more sense that it's the flood that caused all these fossils, and you would expect the marine life to be at the bottom and the bigger creatures that could escape longer and be more to the top. And in any case, when water is carrying debris along, it does grade it out into different sizes. But that's fine. So this was this great shock to find her blood. And this lady, Mary Schweitzer, was back in 2006, the Smithsonian Magazine thought that this was astonishing, radically changed our view of the ancient beasts. It was big news indeed when Schweitzer announced that she had discovered blood vessels and structures that looked like whole cells inside a T-Rex bone, the first observation of its kind. The finding amazed colleagues who had never imagined even a trace of still soft dinosaur tissue could survive. After all, as any this is Smithsonian Magazine, so it's a very prestigious magazine. After all, any textbook will tell you that when an animal dies, soft tissues such as blood vessels, muscles and skin decay and disappear over time, while hard tissues like bone may gradually acquire minerals from the environment and become fossils. Schweitzer, one of the first scientists to use the tools of modern cell biology to study dinosaurs, has upended the conventional wisdom by showing that some rock-hard fossils, tens of millions of years old, may have remnants of soft tissues hidden away within their interior. See, they cannot, for a moment, say we've got our timing wrong. They just have to say you've got to stretch your credulity to think that these things could exist for so long, because the ancient time periods are totally set within their thinking. And when I gave this talk last Wednesday in question time afterwards, my brother said, this lady has been pilloried because her colleagues can see that this is something which goes against their whole evolutionary ideas. All she's done is to just use modern tools to look into these things, and this is what she's found, and nobody disputes it. And this is a confirmation. This is December 2015, so only like 2 years ago. They agree that what was found remains of fresh blood and things like that. But apparently she has been pilloried because of what she put forward. It just shows the pressures that are upon evolutionists to support their cause. Now, why don't we find dinosaurs in the Bible? Well, there's a very simple reason why we don't find the word dinosaur, because it wasn't until 1842 that the word was actually coined. This chap, Richard Owen, he found fossils of big creatures, and he put these two Greek words, dinosaurus, terrible, fearful, great lizards, and that was the first time dinosaurs as a word was put together, so that's 1842. So we won't find in any writing prior to 1842 the word dinosaur. It'll only be found in any writing since 1842. But the question is, do we find descriptions of dinosaurs
within the Bible, because we all acknowledge the Bible was written a long time before 1842. But do we find descriptions of animals which fit that of a dinosaur? Well, God tells us in Genesis chapter 21, when he was creating the sea creatures, that God created great sea creatures, or authorized version says whales. The idea of that is great tannin, and that can refer to either a marine or a land monster. And it's translated in the authorized version as dragon, sea monster, serpent, whale. We get 35 references in the Bible to dragons, which is this tannin, this marine or a land monster. And so this is where we're going to take reading, as it were, but it will be on the screen. But what I've got on the screen is New King James, so if you've got your authorised version, but turn to Job chapter 40 and verse 15 onwards. Here we have God talking to Job and pointing out the punity of man, the greatness of God. Who is Job to question God who can do such wonderful things? And God introduces Job to two creatures who were so superior, as it were, greater than man, that made Job realise that man, wonderful though he was, is in no position to question what God has made and what God has done. And bear in mind, we have a description of a creature which I would say we don't find today. But obviously it was in existence in Job's day, otherwise it wouldn't make any sense. And God makes it clear in this description, you know all about this creature. So Job chapter 14, verse 15, in the authorised version, we use the word behemoth. Look now at the behemoth, which I made along with you. He eats grass like an ox. See now, his strength is in his hips, his power is in his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. His sinews of his thighs are tightly knit. His bones are like beams of bronze, his ribs like bars of iron. He is the first of the ways of God. Only he who made him can bring near his sword. Surely the mountains yield food for him, all the beasts of the field play there. He lies under the lotus trees in the covert of reeds and marsh. The lotus trees cover him with their shade, the willows by the brooks surround him. Indeed, the river may rage, yet he is not disturbed. He is confident, though the Jordan gushes into his mouth. Though he takes it in his eyes, or one pierces his nose with a snare. So that's behemoth. It's an unused root word and means some large beast, and it has a plural of intensity. The beast of beasts. This is the biggest land creature that God has made. Now, what does God say? This is the beast of beasts. It's obviously contemporary with man. I made it along with you. Job knows all about it. Has great strength. He has a tail which is compared to a cedar tree. Which is the largest of the Middle East trees, and the characteristic of the cedar tree is its branches go straight out. We can tell a cedar tree from a mile away. You get cedar trees here? I'm sure you do. Yeah. Chief of the ways of God and absolutely fearless. Now, my margin has the elephant as something, or some foot of hippopotamus, moves his tail like a cedar. I don't really think so. But how about a Brachiosaurus? Now, interestingly, this is an illustration I took from one of the books that I had when my children were young. And in those days, all these creatures were drawn with their tail dragging very inconveniently along the ground, which be a great hindrance to it, so not a very good evolutionary step. But now I have discovered through further examination of remains of dinosaurs that they didn't drag on the floor. More modern one will have it as a wonderful counterweight to this very long, heavy neck. And so it didn't drag on the floor, but was quite that. And a more modern drawing depicts this Brachiosaurus a bit like this. Now, it moves its tail like a cedar. You imagine a tail probably as long as this room just swinging around. It would be a fearsome thing. You wouldn't want to go and disturb a creature like that. And God says, you know this creature, Job, who has a tail like a cedar and is a very confident creature, and you keep well away from it. This is the chief of my works. Now, I can't say that this creature was indeed this particular dinosaur-like creature, but it's something which doesn't exist today, but obviously existed in the time of Job. And then in the next chapter, in chapter 41, it looks at a sea creature, similar one. So, can you draw out Leviathan with a hook, or snare his tongue with a line which you lower? Can you put a reed through his nose, or pierce his jaw with a hook? Can you fill his skin with harpoons, or his head with fishing spears? Lay your hand on him, remember the battle, never do it again. Indeed, any hope of overcoming him is false. Shall one be overwhelmed? Shall not one be overwhelmed at the sight of him? No one is so fierce that he would dare stir him up. I will not conceal his limbs, his mighty power. I've skipped a few verses just to show you. His mighty power, his graceful proportions. Who can open the doors of his face with his terrible teeth all round? His rows of scales are his pride, shut up tightly as with a seal. One is as near, so near another, that no air can come between them. They're joined one to another, they stick together and cannot be parted. His sneezings flash forth light. His eyes are like the eyelids of the morning. Out of his mouth go burning lights. Sparks of fire shoot out. Smoke goes out of his nostrils, as from a boiling pot of burning rushes. His breath kindleth coals, and a flame goeth out of his mouth. Strength dwells in his neck. Though the sword reaches him, it cannot avail, nor can spear, dart, or javelin. He regards iron as straw, and bronze as roughened wood. His undersides are like sharp potsherd. He spreads pointed marks in the mire. He makes the deep boil like a pot. He makes the sea like a pot of oil. On earth there is nothing like him, which is made without fear. He beholds every high thing. He is king over all the children of pride. So again, here is a description of a fearsome creature that God is describing to Job, that Job will be acquainted with, which can breathe fire, it is a very fearful creature. So contemporary with man, can't be harpooned, has got terrible teeth, very strong scales. As it walks, it leaves pointed footprints. Smoke and fire comes out of its nostril, and it's king of animals and fearless. Well, again, my margin does its best. I don't know what yours puts, but mine says perhaps a crocodile. Well, they do have very close scales. They do have pointed teeth. And when they walk, they do leave pointed marks. And they can get, we have fossil remains of very big crocodile-like creatures, 12 metres long, weighing 8 tonnes, a sarcosuchus. But I've never seen a crocodile breathing fire. Now, again, I only put this forward as a speculation, but this creature had a funny horn. Most horns point forward. If you're going to use a horn to fight, you need it to point forward. To have a horn which points backwards really is a bit of a waste of time, isn't it? You can't use it for fighting. And in this particular creature, its horn is a most peculiar construction, and it is thought that perhaps this was a creature that indeed could breathe fire. Let's just put the points on there. It has two passageways which meet and then go down to the nostril. And it's thought that by having two different chemicals there, which it could mix, it could indeed breathe fire. Now, that's not too fanciful, because if we go to the other end of the scale, the Bombardier beetle, which is only about 2.5 centimetres, about an inch long, this creature does exactly that. It can shoot fire, 100 degrees centigrade. It has mixing channels. It has reservoirs here. This has hydroquinine, and then these bigger ones, hydrogen peroxide. When it is under attack, it mixes the two into these explosion chambers, and it emerges as a gas at 100 degrees centigrade, so boiling point of water. It has the ability to shoot under its body, over its body, any way, which way it wants to, because it has these paddles at the back, and it can arch its back, so it can direct this fire any way it wants. So there is a little creature that is quite capable of creating fire. We saw this morning glowworms in the pitch dark. You know, it was just like the stars at night, absolutely spectacular in the caves there. We know there are fireflies, we know there are electric eels, all sorts of strange things. So when God says, Job, this creature, you know all about it, it's far bigger and stronger than man can deal with, and can even breathe fire, then, you know, in faith we believe that this type of creature did exist. We do have the remains of a creature which has a strange form, which could be used as mixing chambers in order for there to be fire. And would explain why China, Babylon, all around the world, fire-breathing dragons, because they did exist. They were contemporary with man. So if dinosaurs were contemporary with man, why did they die out? Well, evolution will give us various ideas. The first was that there was a big meteorite that hit the Earth and killed all the dinosaurs. Now, I don't know why it didn't kill everything else off, why it just selected the dinosaurs, I'm not sure, but that is one of the theories, that there was a meteorite which upset the balance of things. Others, that the temperature either rose or the temperature reduced, and that caused the demise of them. Still others are even more bizarre, that they have constipation and died out. And there are other theories, rather the other, that they were obese and they died out because they got obese. And the very latest one is that there were parasites which ate away their jaws. We know that dinosaurs are able to exist in quite a range of temperatures, because they have found in the Arctic dinosaurs which existed in colder conditions, and it says dinosaurs were incredibly diverse in polar regions as diverse in tropical regions. It was a big surprise for us. How often do we read that? When evolutionists have big surprises as things are discovered, they have to rethink everything, don't they? But let's get it all now within a biblical framework. So we know that they were contemporary with man from the descriptions we have here. I know these things are disputed, but you can see dinosaur footprints alongside human footprints in riverbeds in various places in America, in Russia. Perfectly good human prints, perfectly good dinosaur prints. We also have lots of accounts. Now, Bill was a Danish prince who, born in 495 AD, was credited by Danes for freeing them from the fearsome creatures, the dragons and the sea beasts that were making lives very difficult for the Danes. And the account of what he did is written up in an English story, Beowulf slaying the Grendel. This is an old English epic poem which goes to the 6th to 8th century. Now, most people read this and say, well, it's all a made-up thing, but what he says does make utter sense if we believe that dinosaurs were contemporary with mankind, and this was his ability to slay them, because a lot of things that he talks about make a lot of sense. What he was fighting with, these land creatures, they were bipedal, they had two small forelimbs, they had enormous strong jaws, skin which was impervious to body blows, very ugly looking creatures, hunted at night, and were slain. His method of slaying them was to tear off their forelimb. Now, it is very interesting that there was a Babylonian seal, which has this bipedal dragon, fearsome looking creature, which this chap, although he's got a sword in the other hand, he is, I don't think he's shaking hands with the creature. It looks much more reasonable that he's grasped it by the forelimb, which is much weaker, and is in the process of twisting it off to slay it. And when you look at those bipedal creatures on the church, then that fits very much what Beowulf was slaying 600 years earlier. Now, in Britain, it's always a bit behind. So the other things that he slew were some of the big flying things and the sea dragons. And again, we have histories of Britain. Geoffrey of Monmouth, he chronicles in 1130 the history of Britain. And among the things he talks about in 336 BC, that the Welsh king was eaten by a monster. And outside Geoffrey's chronicle, there are contemporary Tupper writings right up to the very latest that one can find, about 1867. So that's only, what, 160 years ago, 70 years ago, of monsters in Sussex frightening the people. So it would appear that there were creatures, dinosaur-type creatures, that were in existence up to fairly recent times. Now remember, I said that they were, in the main, plants eating. And I believe that God created the dinosaurs for the purpose of keeping down vegetation. In the pre-flood world, it was clear there were the seasons, the earth was warm all round, there was abundant vegetation, which we have in the remains of the gas and the oil that was deposited in the time of the flood. And there was the need for huge creatures to keep down the grass. Now, one thing that I should have perhaps said earlier, dinosaurs are cold-blooded creatures like snakes and crocodiles, and the difference between cold-blooded creatures and warm-blooded creatures is that warm-blooded creatures, parents were very pleased to know that eventually their offspring do stop growing. But cold-blooded creatures carry on growing until they die. So if man was living for 1,000 years almost, it's quite reasonable to think that the animals were living several hundred years. And so, you know, we see a big crocodile, which is probably 30, 40, 50 years old. If that was 200, 300 years old, it would be absolutely gigantic. So, fitting onto the ark. You couldn't get a huge dinosaur onto the ark. But every dinosaur, like babies at the back there, mummy couldn't have a baby that was full size. You start off small, don't you? And even the biggest dinosaur came from an egg no bigger than a rugby ball. And when it comes out, it's like a little chicken. And the purpose of Noah taking the animals on the ark, or God's purpose, God brought the animals to Noah, he didn't select them, was that they should repopulate the earth. And so it makes sense that you take a young brooding pair, in other words, dinosaur wasn't very old, therefore wouldn't have got very big. You take a young pair on the ark, not an old pair which had reached maturity. So, yeah, plenty of room on the ark for dinosaurs. No problem at all. But after the ark, we know conditions changed. Men didn't live 900 years. They lived 120 years, and then 70 years. So the conditions did change after the flood. And so for creatures like the dinosaurs, they would have also shorter lives, so they wouldn't be growing to such big sizes. And also, we mentioned about them not growing. This is why we see remains of cold-blooded creatures in the fossils that are much bigger than they are today. So that's a normal-sized frog. That's from fossilized remains, though it is a soft creature, so it's hard to know how it was fossilized, unless you believe in the floods. If you just think that that creature died and somehow it got overwhelmed and fossilized, it's a bit difficult to think how it happened. But if it was suddenly covered in sediment, yes, you can understand how it was fossilized. But they called it Beelzebub, the devil toad. But much bigger than normal. Those are ammonites. These are oysters, and you can see from the size of the pic that they're much bigger oysters, giant oysters. So cold-blooded creatures get big because they live longer. But with a post-flood demise, the atmosphere would be lighter. The cloud canopy, which caused the rain to come down, disappears. Then that gives a lighter atmosphere, which will make it much more difficult for these creatures with very long necks for the blood to get up to their heads. It'll be harder for the blood to get to the brain. There'll be less food. We know from analysis of oxygen in amber that oxygen levels are falling. They were much higher in the past. So everything was against these creatures getting to big sizes and living long lives. And so they would demise slowly, dying out, and hence we have historical depictions, because Job wasn't all that far from the time of the flood. But as time went on, they would die out, but there were enough creatures for Babylonian tile makers to depict, and enough creatures for carvers in the 9th century in Leicestershire to depict, but have slowly died out. And have they totally disappeared? Well, we're not, because some of our lizards of today, we only think of them as being small creatures because they don't live very long. But if they live much longer, and this skeleton which they found, which they talked about being like a souped-up Komodo dragon. Komodo dragons usually only get to about 10 feet or so, 3 metres, 4 metres long. This is 7 metres long. Well, if a Komodo dragon was able to live twice as long, it would attain to the size of this. So it isn't that it was some strange creature that lived millions of years ago. It was a creature that lived before the flood, which lived much longer than they do today. These are Komodo dragons contemporary. So, only a double lifespan and they will get to 6 metres long. So, probably when we read of dragons in history, it was this creature that is described in chapter 41 of Job, of this huge creature which was able to breathe fire and was very frightening to people. So just finally, Jurassic Park. What Jurassic Park is all about is the recreation from dinosaur bones of DNA and recreating the creatures and them going wild and terrorising mankind of whichever film you watch. I know nothing about these things, but I am sure that the chances of being able to reproduce life from ancient DNA has the kind of odds that we're going to talk about here. It's like having a book with 400 pages. So that's a fairly big book, obviously much less than a Bible, but imagine a book, 400 pages, and unfortunately somebody's put it through the shredder. You know what shredded paper looks like, and your task is to piece it all together. And before you put your hand up and volunteer to piece together this 400 page book, that there are one or two little bits of information that you would find quite useful. One is that it's been written in a language you don't understand, so that does make it a trifle difficult. And the other thing that you must know is that you'll do the task with one hand tied behind your back. So you only have one hand to piece together these 400 pages of shredded paper in a language which you don't understand. But there is finally one more bit of information, just to make it a little bit more tricky, is that you're going to be in a room, shut away, only able to use one hand, and that room is going to be in darkness. And so I want you then to piece together all these bits of paper in a language you don't understand, one hand tied behind your back, and reproduce the 400-page book. So I'm sure that is the odds of being able to recreate life from ancient DNA. But fiction makes more money than truth. Jurassic Park made more than $1 billion. And the one that came out in 2015 has already grossed $1.6 billion, and they're planning to bring out another. Yes, fiction makes far more money than truth. So, that's just putting a different slant on dinosaurs, that they were creatures which God created, they had a use, had a purpose, God needed such creatures to keep down the vegetation, they would grow to big sizes because they were cold-blooded and lived as longer lives than they do nowadays, so expect much bigger creatures. Change conditions after the flood slowly died out, but we have these depictions not only in carvings but in stories of these creatures which have now more or less died out, but who knows, Komodo dragons and these other creatures may be part of the remnants of the dinosaurs that God created so long ago. Thank you.